This is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Ann Tatangelo from Angel Research. So welcome, Ann. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be here. Thank you, Bob.
So just to make everybody as jealous as I am right now, you're in Puglia.
I'm in Puglia, yeah.
Fantastic.
A little out of my research range, but yeah, we're in Puglia and it's hot.
Well, it's hot here too, so.
There you go.
It's not so bad, but you have the nice stone wall behind you and everything. So, so before we get into Angel Research and what you do, what's your Italian background? Where's your family from? And
well, you're going to be probably surprised to hear that I was born in England of English parents that go back to the 1600s. I have no Italian blood whatsoever.
Really? I am
really
surprised.
Thought you might be, yeah. Most people are. I took my husband's name, surname, when we got married because I had been married before, and I just didn't feel it was right to be married to one man while using another man's surname.
Yeah, well, I guess, yes, I guess that's fair enough.
So I took his surname, so I'm now Ann Tatangelo, which makes me sound Italian, but I'm really not.
Yeah, well, you know, what is a real Italian anyway, right? We're a mixture of so many different things.
Exactly.
So have you researched your husband's family? Where's he from?
Well, he's from Sora, which is where we live. Sora is in Frosinone. And yes, I started researching his family and I got quite a ways back. And then people started asking me to search their families. And unfortunately, I haven't really gotten back to him. So he's hanging there in the closet waiting for me to have some free time.
You know, I bounce back and forth between my family and every once in a while, my wife, her mom is from Shaka in Sicily, and her dad's from Puerto Rico. And I've been able to trace one part of our family back to Spain, way back to Spain. And the interesting thing about that is so many Puerto Ricans do DNA tests, certainly more than Italians. Yeah, she's got, thousands and thousands and thousands of cousins. I mean, they're coming out of the woodwork. And I'm going to say at least five or six times as many as I have. So now they'll go back to your English family. And I'll tell you why I want to go back to that for a second. I could trace all the way back to Edward the First. But my daughter, my children are adopted. And my daughter is a direct descendant from Daniel Boone, Captain Morgan.
Wow.
And she's a dispenser going back way, way back. So now what have you found with your English family going back that far?
Well, I can tell you that there's nothing as fancy as your family. they were weavers, silk weavers back in the 1600s, then cotton weavers after that. And a couple of them were coal miners. You know, I've got a little mystery there. One guy disappears. He didn't break the research because I knew who his parents were, but he just disappears off the face of the earth. So he's my little mystery, not really a block, but a mystery.
Yeah, but, you know, that's pretty interesting in that. You know, when you research the Italian families, especially in some of the small towns, you know, everybody was mostly, at least my family, anyway, my mom's family, they were farmers, you know, and when I finally hit upon somebody that was something else, I was like, oh, wow, this is great. Somebody was something other than a farmer or a farmhand. Now my grandmother's, my father's mother, her father's family, they actually, since you mentioned the silkworms, they cultivated silkworms in Calabria. I never knew that until I got there.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? They you know, underneath the palazzo, whatever you want to call it, where they kept the horses and everything, there was like a section where they told me that they cultivated silkworms in the mountains of Calabria. And I can only
Wow.
guess that probably, the climate was probably good for that, or otherwise, why would they?
Yeah, exactly. No, a lot of the silk, of course, silkworms and stuff were imported into England, but the weavers there were quite skilled. And and then you get into all of course, a lot of them were from France and different countries, but yeah, and then of course cotton came in and the American Civil War and everything else. So
Yeah, and I'm
this.
halfway through a fascinating book now about by Tim McCall, and he goes into the men in Renaissance Italy and how they dressed, the attire they wore, and there's a lot of silk and gold and things like that, gold thread and stuff like that. It's pretty amazing what they would do and how they would dress, not only themselves, but their whole court had to
Yeah.
be, wear a certain kind of dress and all look the same and everything like that. Quite interesting. So tell us about Angel Research. I know you have a great YouTube channel. I know you make lots of videos on helping people. So how did you start that, and why did you start that?
Well, as I say, I was researching my husband's family, and I really was just learning Italian. I was having struggling to read the handwriting, as I'm sure many people can relate to. One time I was on one of the message boards, and one of the other people on the board saw that I was from Sora, and he messaged me and said, "I want you to do this research because my cousin says he's found some cousins, relatives in Italy, and I think he's wrong, and I need somebody to prove it." And he said, "I'll pay you." And I thought, "Oh, well, okay, we can work with that." And that's really how it all started. And interestingly enough, I'm still in contact with that gentleman from England whose family was from Sora. And we've become quite good friends. So that's how it all began. And then it just sort of grew from there. People started understanding that they could ask me to do some research, and eventually I worked out a system for it because, of course, I'd been in business before I retired to Italy. So it was just a question of getting a feel for what market was out there, what I could do and what I couldn't do, because, of course, I was still learning. So there's a limit to what you can accept when you're still in the learning process. But I learned a lot. Every research I did brought me one step closer to where I am now today. And of course, I'm still learning.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that you're always learning, and you always find something out. And I think a lot of people don't realize, a lot, I'll speak for Italian Americans, that there was and is a large Italian population in the UK. And the Italians went there very, very early on.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Yeah, very early. Yeah, you're right. But even in America, quite early, most of the ones that emigrated from Italy in the early years were specialists. They were sculptors, they were stonemasons, they were artists in some respect. They had enough money to support themselves, during that transition. But they were really the people that were brought over by the rich Americans to build those fancy buildings and houses and so on, because they just loved this style of architecture.
Yeah, and
This,
yeah, go ahead.
yeah, no, I was going to say the ceramics and, you know, a lot of Sicilians were into flooring. And so, you know, you get churches that want to put in a tile floor, a marble floor. They want marble pillars or statues. Well, who do you call? You call the Italians because they're the experts. They've been doing it for centuries.
Yeah, and I didn't know until I interviewed his grandson, Luigi Del Bianco, was the chief carver for Mount Rushmore. Who knew?
Okay. Yeah.
And his story is fascinating because he was just like you said, that's why he was brought in. Most of the people who were working on it, they were miners, and you know they could blow stuff up. But they didn't have the eye, and you know the way Lou tells the story is, you know, imagine, you know, most sculptures, you walk back a couple of feet and you look at the face and then you come back and carve a little bit. Now, this guy is carving something. You can't walk back, you know, 4 miles and look at the thing.
And you know, there's a special skill to those really huge paintings or sculptures. My son is an artist, and I took him to a Trisulti, Certosa of Trisulti, which is near us. And he said to me, "You know, I've seen pictures, but," he said, "I've never seen one right up close." And apparently, if you were to get at a, you know, straight on angle rather than a, you know, looking up angle, you would see a whole elongated painting. From down below, when you're looking up, it looks like normal. People look like they have normal arms and legs. But if you were to get up on a really high ladder and look at it straight on, you would have a totally different aspect. So
Really?
the artists and yeah, even the sculptors would have to take that kind of thing into consideration, where people are going to be standing when they're looking at
That's amazing. I can't draw a straight line, so
it.
I don't have a clue with any of that. So, you know, doing research for other people or even doing your own, you know, what are some of the things that really stood out that you found for somebody that were like, wow, this is interesting.
Well, I've had some adventures I really have to tell you. I think the one that comes to mind was a young woman from, well, she lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the time. And she said to me, I want to trace my grandfather, but I can't find him anywhere. And all I have is an invitation to his cousin's wedding. And what she have? Oh, and two letters from her grandfather's sisters. And she said, "I gave them to an Italian genealogist and he translated them, but he said he couldn't find anything." And I thought, well, how can that be? So, of course, that intrigued me, you know, any kind of a challenge like that. And you know, when I looked at the wedding invitation, it was the wedding was to take place in a little church that wasn't a parish church. So the guy had sort of said, "Well, no, you know, it's not a parish church, so there's no records." And I thought, well, you know, that's strange because when I got married in Italy, we got married in a different church. The service was in a different church than the parish church where we had to go and visit priest and do all the paperwork. And I thought, you know, there's got to be a way to do this. And it turned out that we ended up, the family were from Rome, and they were people that made those jeweled bustiers, you know, the ones that the queen and all the court ladies make that are all in jewelry and everything. And this is what the family did in Rome. But they actually turn out to be from Naples, and they were originally tailors from Catanzaro in Calabria. So it was really quite an adventure by the time we finished doing, and I learned so much along the way, not just about her family, but how things worked in southern Italy in those days.
Yes. And what, how far back did that family go? How, you know, how.
Well, it went back to the 1700s. I think she wasn't much interested in the Calabria part because they really didn't become famous until they went to Naples and got involved with the court and doing things in a bigger way. And then, of course, they moved to Rome where they became much more important. Yeah, it was a great journey.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you know that when we were in Capricotta, they actually had vestments that my fourth great grandmother had made in Naples for the church. And to your point, you know, it was just all silk and it was made in Naples. So who knows? Maybe they made it, you know, you never know.
Who knows? Who
You never
knows?
know. You never know. You know, and I tell people too, I said, sometimes you need to walk away. You know, sometimes you need to take a break. And when you come back, that elusive peace will fall into place.
It's
So,
true.
with that, you know, what advice do you have for people? I mean, we've both been doing this for a very long time, but, you know, I always get people asking me about how do I start? Where do I start? What advice do you give to people who are just starting out?
Well, of course, most of the time I don't get contact with people until they come to me. Quite often they come to me because they're so frustrated they can't seem to get that connection back to Italy. So I would say if you're starting out on your Italian journey, the first thing that you need to do is research your American family and find out as much as you can. And you need to make sure that the spelling of the surname is the true one. I just recently did some research for a family in America who had so many variations of the family surname. And, he just had no clue where to begin to look because it bore no relationship to an Italian surname. I was able to solve that for him. He was down to Believe as the surname. And it turned out to be Baglivo with a G in it, and who would think? If you're giving your name to somebody and you're illiterate, you can't spell, they are just writing down what they hear. And if you've got a funny accent, they're just going to hear something totally different. And every census taker heard something different. Every time he registered the birth of a child, he got a slight variation. And to get back to that original surname was really difficult because they emigrated in that period before 1892 when the ship manifests were destroyed and all you had left were the customs declarations. And I don't know if you're aware, but the ship manifests, of course, were created by the ship's purser as people got on board, as people booked. And he used their documents that were issued in Italy. So he's writing down exactly what the person's surname is. The customs manifests, of course, were people that the man or maybe he sent his wife to get their bags organized, and of course they just went there and verbally gave their name. Now maybe they checked it on the tag of the baggage, maybe they didn't, but they didn't ask nearly so many questions. So of course what you end up with is slight variations of the surname, but it's really important. You need to find that ship manifest. And if you can't find that, even finding the naturalization won't necessarily give you that correct spelling, but that's the first thing that you have to do. The second thing you have to do is find the town of origin. You know, without that in Italy, you're not going anywhere. Not anywhere at all. And, you know, the name of a province isn't good enough. You have to know the town. And, of course, those customs declarations didn't always give it. Sometimes they did. And in this case, we were lucky with Mr. Baglivo. The name of the town was there. It wasn't written correctly, but it was good enough that I figured, okay, that's where I'm going. And just looking up documents for that town gave me this sense of, okay, the guy's from there. His wife has the same surname, but a different surname, I should say. So she wasn't from the same town. So it, you know, now I'm looking for a town that carries both surnames. So it's a little complicated to really get that town of origin. But without those two things, you're really stuck. And quite often you need an expert to be able to get you over that first hurdle.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. And I was always told that my grandfather was, well, both my father's parents were from Naples. And as it turns out, they weren't from Naples, the city. You know, they were from towns around in and around Naples and things like that. And it took me years and years and years, because later I was told that my grandfather was from Caserta, and he wasn't. And then finally, I found out he was from Pignani or Pignano or someplace like that. And they were married in Circola, and I didn't realize that my grandmother was born there. And when I met my cousin last year, I said, I need their birth and marriage records. And I knew that she lived there. I knew that my aunt and uncle were born in Circola. So I said, you know, maybe there's a chance that they were married there. And not only were they married there, but that's where my grandmother was born. No idea. You know, after I don't know, 15, 16 years of research, I finally found out where she was born.
Sometimes you just have to get lucky, man.
Well, yeah. And you know, it was just fate that I met him, and he didn't live too far from there. And, he, you know, he was nice enough to go there and get this documentation, because that's the other problem. You know, they say you could do it from the United States and write the commune and all of that kind of stuff. That's, if you get an answer from them, you're extremely, extremely lucky.
It's true. Actually, it really depends. If you're searching north of Rome, you have a higher percentage of getting an answer than if you're searching south of Rome.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, most of those places in the south are on mountaintops with 1,000 people in there, so...
Well, and of course, now they're cutting down on staff. You know, a lot of these little towns have a clerk that goes in two mornings a week. And, you know, they really don't have time to research your family. It's really quite difficult to convince them that, you know, this is important. And, you know, sometimes we are doing a lot of work these days, getting people documents for citizenship, for the same reason that they can't get an answer from the town. And a lot of times it's because they're not giving quite the right information, or they're asking for something that the clerk doesn't understand. You know, you ask for a certificate, that's what you're going to get. And what you really need is an extract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to word things carefully to get past the bureaucracy. And of course, if you can send them a copy of something you found online, it's not going to get you anything any faster, but at least it tells them that, yes, this person really was born here. You know, if you're just asking out of the blue, One time we blitzed 10 towns in a province looking for a guy. We couldn't figure out where he was born. And, we weren't getting any answers. And of course we weren't, because he wasn't born there, and they can't be bothered. They just look up the index, and if he's not there, that's it. They close the book and you're gone. They don't even bother to respond to you. And then the client all of a sudden goes to visit some ancient aunt who says, "Oh no, they're from this town. At least his sister was." So, it's like, okay, we can work with that. Now we're on a roll. But yeah, you really have to do the work at home before you set foot in this magical land.
And it's the same thing when you're researching the Antonati, because people say the same thing. I can't find it, or why isn't it there, and it's not indexed, or things like that. And I tell people, I've interviewed several people from family research, and I said they're working on it. I mean, they got millions and millions and millions of records to do, but the names, because of the handwriting, the names that are indexed aren't always the same. So I tell people, you got to try different variations. If you think it ended in an O, try an A, try an I, things like that, because it's just somebody sitting at their computer looking at this record who may or may not even understand Italian that well. I always have the records where the guy writes like me instead of nice and neat. So it's always hard to figure out. But my second great grandmother was from Switzerland, and her last name was Mohr, Mohr. And I found three variations of that in the Antonati. So, Naples, there's not a lot of indexing there. Surprisingly, my mom's family from Torito, practically the whole town going back to 1750 is indexed. So I think it just depended on where they start,
Well, and of course, a lot of volunteers will index the town of their interest. And, one of the things you have to remember is that sometimes, depending on how the indexes were created, I mean, I don't know if you've even thought about it, but you see these 10-year indexes and you think, how did they do that without computers? Put it all in alphabetical order. Without a computer for 10 years worth of documents. Now, if it's a small town, okay, I get that. But if it's a town the size of Palermo or the size of Naples, or Rome, I mean, Rome has these huge 10-year indexes, and you just have to wonder. And if you don't find it in there, then you have to think to yourself, maybe they got missed, because people did get missed from the index. You
Well,
know, you just.
and some indexes, I found indexes that they're in alphabetical order by the first name, and some in the alphabetical order by the last name. So it just depends on the town or the clerk or whomever. And my,
Usually
yeah, go ahead.
that depends on how close they are to Napoleon's entrance, because church records were pretty much always in alphabetical order by first name. And of course, they continued that in the early years of Napoleon before somebody finally got the hang of, this is going to be better if we do it by surname.
And my cousins that were born in Torito, they told me that, I don't think it happened early on because I see who went, but when they were growing up in the 30s and 40s, almost anybody could go to Comune and register the birth. They would send, the 10-year-old daughter to go and say, Francesco was
I've
born
never
on
come
this
across
date.
that.
Yeah, well, they live there, so
No, I've never
I have
come
to
across that.
assume that they're right. They said, yeah, they would send anybody to the community because they didn't really care, because they probably, valued the church records more, and it didn't matter for them, because they didn't know that we were going to, 50, 60, 70 years later, 100 years later, we're all going to be researching the for reasons. So you've I didn't realize this. So you're retired there, yes? Is that what you
Yeah,
said earlier?
that's right.
And so when did you retire? And what is it like? How does it work?
Well, 20, we came here 20 years ago. We took
Oh,
early
wow.
retirement and we returned to my husband's hometown. And he, yeah, I don't know. He just, I was looking for something to do, and that's what I did. That's what I ended up. The town finally got a library, and I went in there one day, and there's a door leading to the Archivio Storico, and I thought, oh wow, amazing. Let's see what's in there. And from that point on, when I started looking at the records and trying to decipher them, and of course my husband was no help at all, and I'd say, well, you read Italian. Yeah, but I don't read this handwriting, So, it just, I'd spent hours poring over these documents, looking at them and trying to figure out what else they could tell me. And just it became a passion.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Since we got there last year, we were there last year. I keep telling my wife we should just go there and stay there and not come back. But I haven't convinced her yet. She's worried about how close we are to the hospital and what if something happens. And I said, oh, something could happen any place. But I said the food is fresher, it tastes better. I said, and we won't understand all the news on TV, so that's probably good too. We won't get aggravated about that nonsense. So.
Well, there now, well, that was true 20 years ago when I moved here, but nowadays, you get all the Sky channels, CNN, everything. So, you're really not that much out of touch anymore. In fact, one of the books I wrote was a compilation of my diaries, my letters to friends and family about my first 10 years of living in Italy and how little things would happen that just struck me as so funny. And in fact, I gave a copy to an Italian doctor who reads English, and he came to me laughing his head off and said, "It is so funny to see ourselves through the eyes of an English woman. The things that make you laugh that seem strange to you." So.
Well, the funniest thing that happened to us when we were there, we were going to take the fast train from Rome to Naples just for the experience. I said, we don't have fast trains in America. We got all the space, we don't have fast trains. But anyway, so we get to the station and it's I guess we were like maybe 45 minutes early, an hour early. And I look at the board and everything is delayed. Every train going, every place is delayed. And I'm like, oh boy, this is terrible. And if they were like 60 minutes delayed, and then it's 75 minutes, then it's 90 minutes, then it was like 2 hours. So my wife said, well, what are we going to do? We were there with the kids. What are we going to do? I said, wait, what are we going to do? What can we do? So there were no seats. So she said, we're going to go upstairs and see if there's seats on the second level. So I said, okay, you go. I'm not going to drag all these bags up there. I'll wait down here and I'll, let you know. So, but as I'm watching the board, our train is not showing a delay. The only train not showing a delay is our train, but there's no track number. 10 minutes before the train's going to leave, they put up a track number. The train's going to leave in 10 minutes. So I called them. I said, come, why? Just come. Don't ask questions. Just get down here. So we go running for the gate. We have the paper tickets with the code on it. I'm trying to scan it. And the guy at the gate is going, your train? I know enough Italian to know where you've been. And I said, see. And he goes, go. Just don't even scan a ticket. Just go. We get on the train. It left like 15, 20 minutes late. But because there was something wrong with the fast track, the express track, it took us 3 hours to get to Naples anyway. But at least we were on the
Oh,
train and we, at least we were on the train and we got there. In the end, everything was fine. But it was just like so crazy. And I said to my wife, I said, that's probably the way it works. They That one train was cleared to go. Everything else didn't go anywhere, but that train was cleared to go.
Yeah.
But that was a funny experience there. So how many people in the town that you live in? It's very
It's
small.
about no, it's about 30,000.
Oh, so that's a nice size, yeah.
It's in a valley between, the mountains, and we don't get too much snow. We don't get any snow really in the winter. It does fall. Everything closes for half a day or a day while they wait for it to melt. But other than that, we're good.
And how close to Barrie are you?
We're about 3 hours from Barrie. Three maybe, yeah, 3 hours from Barrie. We're an hour from Rome.
Oh, so
About an
you're up
hour.
there, yeah.
Oh yeah, we're about an hour and a half from Naples.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good location, and like I say, no snow.
Well, no, that's nice to be able to get to Rome in an hour and Naples in an hour and a half. And you drive, you take the train, or?
We usually drive to the train station and take the train in because driving in Rome is not recommended. It's
No.
really not. No.
When we were
And
there,
plus, the train takes you right into the middle of the city and you can get anywhere from there. So.
yeah, when we first went like 28 years ago or something like that, I was a lot younger. I drove from Naples to Sorrento and drove the Amalfi Coast and all that kind of stuff. I would never do that again. So before we go, how could people find you, and where could they find your books?
Well, the easiest place is my website, angelresearch.net. And the book, there are links to the books. Of course, I wrote two books that are dedicated, one to the province of Frosinone and one to the province of Latina. And they each list all of the towns in the province, the records that are available for those towns, where you can find them, whether they're online or not, parish records included. And the Latina book, because of course there are fewer towns in Latina, also includes 100 pages of research guidance, telling you things that you won't learn in the courses that people offer. Things that I'm telling people in my video series, little tips and hints of places to look for things, what to do if you get stuck, that kind of thing. So the links are there right on the website. The website also, of course, contains a lot of written articles on the same topics, helping you. One of the things that I wanted to accomplish was to help people do their own research. And I think the biggest thing that irritates me on message boards is somebody asks, how can I find this record? And immediately three or four people jump in and say, oh, here's the record. And I always think, that wasn't the question. The guy wants the excitement of finding it himself. It's good when somebody gives it to you, but it doesn't help you move to the next level. And I think it's much better to be told where to go and look than it is to be just given the record in your hand.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that way, because I see it on my Facebook group all the time, of somebody who just, like you say, where can I find this? And then all of a sudden somebody shoots out a whole bunch of stuff. And I know they're trying to be helpful, but to your point, if you really want to pursue it, and part of the thrill is actually finding it, at least for me, is finding it yourself.
Exactly. Exactly.
I did a lot, and I eventually had to reach out to somebody in Italy, because I couldn't find anything on my father's family. And probably because I was looking in the wrong place. I was looking in Naples, and he wasn't in Naples. But he helped me find some things. And then from there, I was able to, latch onto that and find other things on my own. So sometimes, you get a little help like that. It's super. Listen, Anne, thanks again. I really appreciate you taking the time, and Anne's posting on my group all the time. So if you want to see her videos, they're there, or you could contact her direct.
They certainly can. Thank you, Bob.
Hi, everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino, just letting you know that my new book, Farmers and Nobles, is now available for sale on www.italiangenealogy.blog/farmersandnobles, or you can find the link in the podcast notes. Thanks for listening.